Welcome to Nuanced Judaism, coming to you from OU Torah.
I'm Simi.
And I am Rivka.
Hi.
Hi, welcome back.
Okay, so the idea that I wanted to put forward to you today is I was basically giving a class in a seminary in Yerushalayim, and the discussion came up about tznius. Now, whenever this happens, I go in full retreat. I say, if you want to discuss this, I have a lovely wife called Rivka. She would happily discuss it with you because I find it slightly awkward to discuss this. Also a bit bizarre to discuss the idea of tznius and what people should wear with people of the opposite gender. I don't think it's really...
You've got one thing right already. That's pretty humble of you. It's a good thing that we both teach in the same seminary. That definitely works in our favor here.
So what would you... If you had to give a... one point, and over later episodes we can develop this, and it's probably connected to the spies because there was perhaps a lack of tznius there in terms of how they exposed the... okay, that's a bit of a stretch perhaps. Yeah. But if you had to give one principle, one idea that is like as a beginning steps towards a more sophisticated approach to the concept of tznius rather than it just being about people's elbows, what would you say?
Wow. Okay. So... First of all, what is tznius for people who might not know that term? It's loosely translated as modesty. And of course, I don't like that translation because it sounds very prudish and very cover up because otherwise or else. So I'm actually going to try to develop a different translation. But tznius or tzniut in Ivrit would be the laws governing a modest way, dress and behavior. That doesn't leave everything exposed, basically. Oftentimes, women will have a larger focus on this because in Jewish tradition, women cover up and have certain laws about covering up.
And covering up?
Yeah, covering up.
Like their face?
No, like different parts of their body.
Men cover up different parts of their body. I mean, I would be arrested if I didn't.
That's very interesting that you say that because... In the more orthodox circles, men actually end up covering up more than women. You think about a Hasidic guy and a Hasidic woman. But it is often focused more for women and often to their detriment. You'll often have a super focus on the externalities of elbows, yes, elbow not. How many inches below your knee? Not pants. And it ends up being a reflection of 21st century. It's our Judaism is always going to be a reflection of the outside world. And the outside world is very much categorized by quick, easy, and superficial. And by telling people that tznius has to do with covering up and with just what you wear and just that women should have to dress in a certain way is quick, easy, and superficial.
So interesting, just a side point to add to that is that religion at its worst, or let's rephrase that, Judaism at its worst, it will slowly but surely start to reflect the worst parts of the culture.
Correct. So Judaism as its worst would be proxy, by proxy. I am acting this way. I don't believe it for a second. As a matter of fact, I would ridicule it behind closed doors. I'm still doing it for the social benefits, which is exactly what many secular people do when it comes to fashion or their beliefs in general. They're just walking the walk and talking the talk.
It's interesting, a discussion for another time. There are certain beliefs. It's interesting you say beliefs can be fashionable. There are certain beliefs today that I think on reflection people would probably question, but they're fashionable to wear. You wear beliefs on your shirt to show that you fit
belong
into a certain
to that
club.
And there's such, let's just not minimize the deep, deep need of people to belong to something larger. So I just want to put that out there. That's also a big need for people. Okay, but what is tzniut? That if you're asking me to share one thing, it's very hard because I do teach this.
With the caveat that we could develop this further.
Fair enough, because that's actually good for me to know because one thing is very difficult in tzniut because the whole point is that it's multi-layered and it takes time to develop and I don't want to give a pat answer. I don't want to just say, it's not about the clothes, because guess what? I do wear a skirt. So if I can say one thing, I would say this. The laws of tzniut, if you go to their source, they have nothing to do with women, and they have nothing to do with clothing.
Okay, so one second. So the idea of tznius, let me just repeat this. The idea of tznius, when you read a book from Feldheim or from Art Scroll, tznius, is always talking about clothes.
Yes, and I'm not going to deny that the application for women will have to do with a certain type of dress. I'm not denying that. But just like with Shabbat, before you're learning about the halachos of, am I allowed to separate this from this? And how do I separate it? You first go to the place in the Torah where God created the world in 6 days, rested on the seventh, where God told the Jews to create the Mishkan, and we take the laws from there.
So perhaps saying it another way is that if you appreciate the core where everything grows from, A, you might change your mind about what you think grows out from that core, but also if you're already doing something that grows out from that core, it gives it a deeper appreciation.
Exactly. So taking something less sensitive as tzniut, taking something like Shabbat, understanding...
Like as a metaphor.
Exactly. So taking Hashem creating the world in 6 days and resting on the seventh, suddenly you realize it's maybe not just restrictions, it maybe is a creative process that's ceasing to make room for something else, like a relationship. Ah, okay, now let me learn the laws and see what they have to say. So before we talk about skirts and pants and covering up, what is the source in the Torah, the five books of Moses, for tzniut? And there's one source, which has nothing to do with clothes and nothing to do with women. It's about when you're in the battlefield and you're in a place, and think about the battlefield for a second. If you read biographies about people in the First World War, a lot of people, what they say is that they felt their dignity stripped off, not necessarily with fighting, but when they had to be completely public. They went to the bathroom together. They slept in the same room. There was no individuality, which is what war will do, which is what an army will do.
Which is actually interesting. It's a necessity because, I mean, not that people should have their dignity stripped, but when you're going to war, you cannot look at the other as being another.
An individual, yeah. You can't be like, oh, you told me about this. It was a computer game, a war computer game. But every time you focused in on the person, what happened?
That when you first, actually, just for those of you who want to know, it was called Sniper Elite. And the point of the game was a sniper. But what they did was that when you focused in on the actual character you were about to shoot, it gave a bit of a biography and it gave a bit of a background
like
to the character.
John, dentist, three children.
Right. And it changed the entire dynamic of how people played the game. People were, because you individualized that which can't be individualized during a battle.
Right. So there you go. So in a war... So in the Torah, it's
in the status
about,
quo, you have that.
Exactly. So in the Torah, you're talking about when you're at war and you need to relieve yourself. So usually what would happen is you would just relieve yourself because, I mean, for goodness sake, we're at war. You're supposed to let the animal side out to wage war and battle. And God says, no, I am still in the battlefield with you. You go outside, you relieve yourself, you have a shovel with you, you bury whatever you produced. And as grimy as this halacha is, you have to analyze it symbolically. You're in a place where, by default, your human dignity and your privacy would be stripped away. I mean, for goodness sake, nobody's thinking about that right then. You're thinking about living and dying. And yet, at this very moment, God's like, no, you still have dignity. Even when nobody's looking, you go behind, you go away, and you bury whatever you've produced because you are not an animal. Right now, you might be in an animalistic place, but you are a human being with free will. And that is the only time we have an allusion to the concept of tznius.
So to repeat the idea, you're saying that in the place where you would expect God not to be, you have to recognize God is.
Oh, more than where God isn't, you would bring God in, which is a very Jewish concept, but more where you would forget that you are godly, where it'd be very normal for you to forget that you are godly. No, you are not just an animal, you're godly.
So at the place, not only where you would forget, where you would almost be justified in ignoring your dignity.
That's it.
The dignity of humanity in every respect, almost as a necessity, you need to reduce human dignity. This is the one place that you have to have human dignity at the forefront, which actually, by the way, impacts how you go to war in general, not
fair
about
enough,
what you do
yes.
with your waist.
But now, exactly. And the only other time, you don't actually mention the word sniot here. The other time you actually see the word sniot is v'hatsnea lecha semashem alokecha, which is one of the prime motivators for everything Jewish. You should walk modestly with God. What does that mean?
It's where, what does God ask of you? To walk in justice and love the good and walk modestly with your God. loosely translated.
But basically, to boil this whole thing down, if you want to crystallize the idea.
It's one of those phrases that we get from the prophets that sort of distills Judaism in a statement. This is what God asks of you, to walk modestly with him.
Exactly. But what does this mean? It doesn't mean cover your elbows, at least not in its core. It might show itself with that, maybe, maybe not. But what it means at its core is whether you're in public and whether you're in private, you need to remember that you are a soul. It means that even when you're in a desert island with nobody there, you're not acting with dignity because other people are watching. You're acting with dignity because God is there.
So your inherent dignity has to be at the forefront of your mind.
Now, of course, we can discuss at other times how this blossoms out in dress and behavior. Because obviously, if I...
But that would apply to both men and to women.
Both men and women. Now, there are different halachos for both of them. I agree with you. But the core here is I want to assert my soul over my body. That is the entire thing, which is when you're teaching to either women who have been through a religious system or people who have never heard about this before, the first thing you need to teach is the confidence and the beauty of you within. And not even talk about clothes. And once you've asserted the fact that you are a soul and that you are beautiful inside, the next step would be, how do we bring focus to the inside and not the outside? But that's a different conversation.
Lovely.
All right, great. Thanks for listening.